You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Episode 187 of Below the Belt for West Coast hip-hop fans. That'll be a big number. It's the deep cover episode. Joined by Luke and John McDonald today. So I'm very happy about this. Luke, how are you, sir?
I'm good, man. Good to be here. Howdy. Good evening.
And John, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on again. I'm surprised you're not sick of me yet, but I'm not complaining.
No. Well, I think, do you know what we're going to do, John, this time? We need to indoctrinate Luke into our moaning sessions at the end of the podcast. I don't know if you heard the last one, Luke, but me and John spent the last 5 minutes slagging off people that liked Formula One and NFL. Are you into either of those?
I'm a massive fan and I'm quite offended. No, I hate both of them. Yeah, I didn't actually hear that episode, but I heartily approve of any hate towards F1 and NFL because they're both shit.
Yeah. He's saying that while wearing a Red Bull t-shirt. It's like, yes, we. Oh, he's got a Kronk hoodie on. He's got the Kronk hoodie on. I've got a super rare t-shirt on, which is that boxing shop in, I'm going to say Brooklyn, somewhere. Somewhere in New York anyway. But yeah, some boxing. They do boxing stuff, MMA, Roots of Fire, all that sort of shit. I went down there. It was years ago now. It was about 6-7 years ago. But I wear this t-shirt from time to time because it's nice and comfortable. I haven't even got the fucking running order up. It is a deep cover episode. Deep cover is the song by Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg, which would be a great entrance song, actually. I remember many years ago, Luke, I used to do a hip-hop podcast, and the guy that hosted it, the Notorious P.O.D., it was called, and the now defunct. The host, John Bass, top guy, would ask, if you used to be a boxer, what would your entrance music be? I'm interested in that answer, Luke, but I'm also interested in what's kind of your favourite entrance music of any boxer.
Ooh. Yeah, I was having a think about this earlier. For sentimental reasons, I think I would go, as I was a very big Chris Eubank fan when I was growing up, Simply the Best, or The Best, as I think it's actually called. Oh. When that used to start and a Eubank fight was approaching, I would get pretty excited. More recent times, what's the Golovkin one by the, is it the White Stripes? What's that, Seven Nation Army?
Is it John?
Yeah.
That's a good one. And another sort of sentimental one, I don't think he always used it, but occasionally Carl Froch used to use No Easy Way Out from the Rocky IV soundtrack.
Okay.
Which is one of my favourite 80s soft rock anthems. A little bit niche, even though it's from Rocky IV. So I always like, I think AJ used it once. I think when he lost to Usyk. But I'm a big No Easy Way Out fan as well.
All of those are good. John?
I actually have to copy Luke's homework here because as a Rangers fan, it has to be Chris Eubank and the best.
Okay. What's the one that, you might have mentioned it because I don't know rock music, like I don't know it. What's the one that Vlad Klitschko would come out to? The da-da, da-da, that one. What's that one that Vlad Klitschko used to come out to? It's like a very...
Thunderstruck by AC/DC?
That sounds it. That sounds right. That's a good one. That's a good one. Vlad Klitschko would come out to that quite a bit.
I was already so bored before he even came into the ring that I wasn't listening to the music.
It's funny, actually, because Box Nation announced today that they're doing their another comeback. They're kind of rebranding and they're going onto YouTube. But when you think of Vlad Klitschko, you think of Box Nation, don't you? And those nights staying up with, you know, Steve Bunce and Barry Jones in the studio and waiting for hours on end for the Vlad Klitschko fight to start. I think...
And then just watching him clinch for ages and never get punished for it. Yeah.
And that's it, isn't it? It's quite easy when fights like Fury and Usyk aren't made to kind of look back at Vlad Klitschko and his reign and to put rose-tinted glasses on. But, John, it was mostly dog shit, wasn't it?
It was an awful, awful watch. Like, he was very effective at what he did. He shouldn't have been allowed to do half of it. Jab, jab, clinch, jab, jab, right hand, end of fight. 20-minute ring walk. Like, it was painful stuff, but he was very effective. He was very good at what he did. He's probably the classic example of a guy minimizing his flaws, maximizing his strengths, and being protected by the officials. He's essentially Liverpool of boxing.
Ah, that was good. There's gonna be. I know there's Liverpool fans listen to this. I know there is. I'm certain there is. I know there is. But
Sean Brain will be sending me death threats for that.
Oh God, yeah. He's a strange one, Sean. Top guy, but he's a Rangers and a Liverpool fan. And normally it's Celtic and Liverpool, but I think there's a reason behind it. I don't know it. Mark told me once. I can't remember what it is. But yeah, the Liverpool of boxing. That's amazing. My entrance music, I always enjoyed the Prodigy song that George Groves would come out to. I can't remember what it was called.
Spitfire.
That's it, isn't it? Yeah, that one. I always enjoyed that. And then Still Dre for Chris Eubank Jr. Chris Eubank Jr. would come out. It was part of the whole thing. I remember being at the Kensington Olympia when he fought Reynold Quinlan for the IBO super middleweight title. And his dad was there. His dad came out to The Best by Tina Turner before Chris Eubank came out. And for a moment, we all thought that Junior was going to come out to Simply the Best. And we was like, fuck, like we're here for Steel Dre. Like, what the fuck? And then Steel Dre came on and the night was saved and he won the fight. And yeah, and so everything was okay after that. But I suppose those two, I'd probably say Steel Dre, Spit Biofight by George Groves. A lot of the shame of a lot of the American fighters is they come out to whatever kind of the current rapper is and that rapper will ring walk them out. They don't tend to stick to one song. So that's a real shame because it's nice when they have a theme song, if you like. But a lot of them don't these days.
I once tried to look back and work out who the first boxer to use ringwalk music was. I can't remember if I worked it out in the end. I think Larry Holmes was one of the earliest, wasn't he?
Was he? I did not know that.
Didn't he used to have the one that David Hay had? John would seems like he'd be good in a pub music round. What was that? What was the one? What was David Hay's one, John?
Ain't no stopping us now.
Larry Holmes have the same one?
Yeah, at some point.
That was great. That was a good entrance song as well. David Hay would come out to that. Luke, did you see Ray Ford at the weekend?
No, I've only seen the late clips. I've not seen the whole fight, but it sounded like a cracker. Yeah.
Oh, Yeah, I didn't want to go too much into it because I wasn't sure if everybody had seen it, but hadn't seen a lot of Ray Ford. But he won the WBA featherweight title, which was vacated by Lee Wood, and against Klimatov in Vegas, I think it was. Did you see it, John?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, what performance, eh?
Incredible. Like, I was not sold on Ray Ford on the way up. He had a draw. He had a split decision that he could probably have lost if he wasn't the A side. But he's one of these guys. He's had a big mouth on Twitter. He's been calling out all the champions wanting the big fights. He gets called to face Otabek Kolmatov, who most people would have ducked and gone a different way. He took it. Top rank, win the bids. He's the away fighter. He goes for it. He's 7 seconds from defeat. He's a guy known for skillful boxing. And he goes out there, sticks it on the puncher, and pulls it out of the bag with 7 seconds to spare. That's what elevates a good fight to a great fight. It's a finish that sticks in the memory. And it's something that makes me want to watch more of Ray Ford now, because he's a guy who talks the talk and evidently walks the walk. So I'm excited to see where this goes.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, he was... Yeah, Klimatov probably was deserving to win the fight. He was landing the cleaner shots. But you always kind of felt that Ray Ford was the puncher in there, that he was kind of landing the more hurtful shots. And when he needed to pull something out of the bag, he did. And I'm a fan now. That's it. I'm a fan of Ray Ford. And I hope he does. I hope he goes and does big things. Apparently, I've been told that Graham Houston, the former Boxing Monthly editor, was big on Ray Ford from day one, that he was saying he was going to do things. So, Graham Houston watches more boxing than any of us put together, I think, to be honest. His Twitter feed is just hilarious. Well, not hilarious, but it's like, I'm watching this as live now, because he lives in Canada, I think. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching this as live. He never watches anything delayed. He watches it without knowing the result as live every time. And he watches fucking everything. It's just so impressive.
Everything.
This is so impressive. I don't think anybody in the world watches more boxing than him. I just wanted to touch on that because, yeah, it was a big kind of thing that happened in boxing this weekend. The other kind of big thing that happened in boxing this week, Luke, was the whole Canelo saga. And there's been all sorts of kind of rumours and counter rumours and stuff that's gone on. As of today, I saw earlier today, we are recording on the evening of Monday, the 4th of March, in case it changes in the morning. Canelo, it's looking like that Canelo hasn't left PBC, that he's going to box on PBC on Amazon Prime, and he's going to fight Jaime Munguia and then possibly Jamal Charlo, which is awful. What do you think about this whole thing?
The whole saga, it's a bit messy, isn't it? Who knows where it's going to end up? I mean, to be honest, I don't really care who he fights for, but I think, like most people, I want to see him fight David Benavidez. That's the obvious fight, and Canelo don't seem to want that smoke.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. What do you think, John, about this whole thing?
It's all a mess, and when most of the sources are coming from Rick Glaser, you've got to take it all with a pinch of salt. Ultimately, we're probably getting the second best available fight just now when the other options are Charlo and Berlanga. This is sort of the second best available. It's fine. Yeah. You know, Munguia made a statement against John Ryder. I don't think he's good enough, but it's a perfectly fine fight. I'm happy with it.
Yeah, the Munguia fight doesn't bother me at all, but I agree with Luke. If he's going to fight Munguia now, fine. But September should be David Benavidez. I don't think Jamal Charlo makes it to a ring to fight Canelo. I think somehow he does something to fuck it up and end up not being in the ring for that. And I just don't think he's... I don't think people are going to buy it. I just don't think... He looked like shit last time out. He missed the weight. I don't see him fighting Charlo. I don't think Charlo's in the right frame of mind to get to that fight. I just don't think he can handle the pressure of an event of that size. So I think they could be, or Canelo could be forced into a position in September to fight David Benavidez because there's just going to be nobody else. And he should. It's such a blatant duck at this point. I can't think of many more, but I would like to talk about blatant ducks at some point. Maybe not today, maybe another time. We'll see how we do for time. But yeah, it looks like at the minute it looks really blatant that he is just avoiding David Benavidez. So it's been pretty quiet, actually, boxing wise. And for our loyal listeners, will be upset at me because I haven't recorded in about 3 weeks. I'm very sorry for that. I genuinely am. But it's just been fuck all to talk about, to be honest with you. So I was just like, haven't found anything really to talk about. Obviously, Anthony Yard boxed a few weeks ago, but he boxed a complete pudding. But there's been nothing else over here, really, that's really got me wanting to, you know, get the microphone on and, you know, start recording. And I was like, I need to do some things to fill the gaps. And Luke said, let's do some lists. Because lists always get people talking. And they do. You're right. They always get people talking. Again, following with the theme of the hip-hop stuff, if you put a list of top 100 rappers out there, it gets people so angry. People are so angry. And if I see T.I. on a list, I'm throwing the phone across the room. Like, that guy. But, yeah, so list, you're right. It gets people talking. So we thought we'd start with heavyweights today, Luke. So what we're going to do is normally what people do is they say, oh, what's your top 10? I wanted to do something slightly different. I think what happens is, and I said this before we started recording, people will confuse their favorites with what they think is the best, and their kind of bias will slip into that. And I think we need to be grown up. I think we need to be a bit more.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
It's the Smucker's Uncrustables podcast with your host, Uncrustables. Okay, today's guest is rough around the edges. Please welcome Crust.
Thanks for having me.
Today's topic, he's round with soft pillowy bread.
Hey.
Filled with delicious PB&J.
Are you talking about yourself?
And you can take him anywhere.
Why'd you invite
him? And we are out of time.
Are you really cutting me off?
Uncrustables are the best part of the sandwich. Sorry, Crust.
Mature about that and just admit that we have favorites, but also we're grown up to know to who's the best and who's not. So what we're going to do is we're going to do top five, our top five heavies that are, we think are the best or the greatest. And we're going to do our top five favorite heavyweights. So John.
Yep.
Do you want to start us off?
Yep. Yeah, okay. I will go straight in at number five with somebody who I think is a bit underrated, starting to get appreciated a little bit more. But I'm going to go with Lennox Lewis. And that isn't with the Union Jack bedsheets. I think his resume is chronically underrated. And I actually think head-to-head, he would probably be the guy I would back to come out on top of all top 20 historical heavyweights in a round robin.
Okay, what we're going to do is, I'm changing it on the fly here. We're going to carry on. We're all going to do our five, then we're all going to do our four. Yeah, three, yeah. Two, one. Right.
Got it.
Yeah, Lennox. Yeah, he's in somewhere in my five. So yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Well, to be fair, Luke, Boxing News, when they did their top 100, I think they had him number two.
In heavyweights.
Yeah. Ever. Ooh. Two or three. I think it was two or three. Crikey. It was very, very high. I need to go and dig the magazine out. Who's number five, Luke?
Well, it's not Lennox Lewis.
Okay.
In fact, I'd have him about 10 or 11.
Okay.
I'm a big Lennox fan, but, you know, those two one-punch KOs against mediocre fighters, sort of, I hold that against him. So my number five, someone else who I think is very overrated, someone else with a very good jab, Larry Holmes at five for me.
Okay, at five. I should have actually preempted this with, if I hear Mike Tyson come out of any of your mouths, we're having a meet up in a car park. Because I'm not having that. and there'll be people that I'm throwing stuff across the room because people love Mike Tyson. Funnily enough, to be boring, Larry Holmes is five for me as well. Great jab. Really long run at heavy. Spiteful as well when he wanted to be. People think about fighters with good jabs like him, and they think that they're going to be boring, but he had a spite about him. Going to throw John hates me for this random question. Random question, John. Who would win prime for prime, Larry Holmes or Lennox Lewis?
That's a really, really tough one. That is a horrible question. And I really hate that question. It's a really hard one for me.
Do you want, Luke, do you want to try it while John thinks?
I would go Holmes. I think he's got better powers of recuperation. That recovery from the knockdown against Ernie Shavers, I mean, that is Fury versus Wilder is the only comparable recovery, I think, by a heavyweight. I think Holmes would outlast Lewis. I think he'd get him out of there late.
Yeah, it's. I do feel bad. I do feel bad. That's really tough. But John,
great fight,
John. You've ducked it long enough. Come on,
Luke's got to be convinced. I'm not going to argue with Luke. I can totally see that outcome. It's one of these. It's a really tough fight. It's a battle of two good jabs. I think that Holmes got the better jab. I think that Lennox has got the better backhand. So it's a close one, but yeah, probably Edge Holmes, but with no conviction. Absolutely no conviction in that one.
It's tough. It's really difficult. I'm going to pick Lennox just because, fuck you, that's why. There's no real reason. There's no real reason behind it just because Lennox is my guy. That is my guy. Like, I love him. When I was growing up, you know, we had Sky and Lennox was just the champion. It was his first reign of having a WBC belt. Like, that was my guy. And then in the early 2000s, when I was, you know, becoming an adult and he was the champion again, he'd won it for the second time. And then third time, like, that's my guy. And then I met him in the newly opened Heathrow Terminal 5. And he was super nice and super graceful. And I have a picture of him somewhere. It's in a frame somewhere. So, yeah, Lennox is my guy. So I would pick Lennox out of pure bias. fast counts, dodgy judges, whatever. Get him the W, basically. John, number four, please.
Holmes.
Okay.
So I've gone one higher than both of you. I think that, again, guy who gets chronically underrated because he followed that classic era. He wasn't one of that golden period. He wasn't Muhammad Ali. His popularity suffered a little bit as a result of that. I think there is a greater appreciation coming for his achievements now. Long reign, could do a bit of everything. Phenomenal fighter and really nice guy. Met him once at York Hall.
Oh, nice. I feel like in the last 10 years, he hasn't aged a day. Like, he looks exactly the same in the last 10 days. And actually, I don't know if you ever saw it, Luke. Did you ever see the Larry and Muhammad documentary, the ESPN 30 for 30 one?
Oh, no, not seen that.
Oh, it's very good. It's very good. It's their kind of story of them sparring at Big Bear and then ended up boxing. But there's some kind of archive footage of kind of Larry away from that. And, you know, it's the 80s, but he's got a car phone and all that sort of stuff. He was very smart, wasn't he? He was very business aware, kind of like Ray Leonard as well. He was very aware of his money and kind of kept his money. So, you know, he did box on for too long, but he's in pretty good nick. Who was your number four?
My number four might surprise you. I'm going with The Rock, Marciano.
I'm devastated.
I'm sorry. I know you wanted to put two fingers up to Zanon and Rossi. But
I did. And for no reason. They're both wonderful people. They're both wonderful, wonderful human beings. Like, Paul is probably somewhere now in a soup kitchen, like, doing something wonderful for human beings. And I'm just sat here with you guys talking about boxing. Like, he's a better person than me. But do I want to seem slightly upset at not having him on our list? Yes, I do, because I'm a nasty man. Rocky Marciano is a good shout, I suppose. Tell us why. Tell us why, Luke.
I mean, I sort of think there was probably a point where he was slightly overrated, you know, the only unbeaten heavyweight and all of that. And then it sort of went back the other way. So I sort of feel he's now a little bit underrated. You know, 49-0 is an incredible achievement. The man was hard as nails. He always found a way to win. And although he wasn't operating in the highest quality era, you know, he still got wins against Wolcott, Charles, other Archie Moore. You know, it's a good resume. And I give points for someone getting out at the right time and not damaging their legacy. And he's the ultimate example of that, isn't he?
Yeah, I think the other reason why I flinched was the whole Mayweather comparison as well. Like when Floyd broke the record, when Floyd equaled the record against Andre Berto, his son was kind of out in the press and going, "Ooh." Actually, no, it was when he beat Conor McGregor and he went 50-0. His son was so upset about it. I fucking loved it. I thought it was hilarious that he'd beat this absolute pudding to break his dad's record. And just, I loved it. But yeah, no, I get it. I get it absolutely. Do you think, Luke, actually, that, you know, obviously back in those days, it was always kind of the great white hype, and, you know, kind of white fighters were pushed a lot more. Do you think perhaps his legacy suffered because of that in a reverse kind of way, where he was almost perceived to be this overhyped white fighter in mm-hmm. a time when black fighters were brought down? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think there's maybe an element of that. I think also the fact that he was so small by modern standards works against him, because people always say, oh, you know, he wouldn't have lived in the modern era, he's too small, he's a light heavyweight, that sort of thing. But for me, when I'm assessing these guys, for me it's more about accomplishments, and also historical impact for me is quite, like, none of my top, I mean, I think Larry Holmes is the most recent fighter I've got on my list. So I very much go with the...
I completely get Luke's arguments for Marciano, but the reason he didn't make it into my top five is, although his championship run is really solid with the wins over Wolcott and Charles, fight of the year with Charles, a win over Archie Moore, the stuff before that is pretty low level. His pre-championship run, it's a lot of club fighters. There's some really limited guys in there.
Yeah,
I think that someone like Lennox beat far more capable guys. Mm. You know, I think the wins over Holyfield, because let's be honest, he's got two wins over Holyfield. The draw was a bullshit decision. Mm. Stuff like that counts more for me because of the longevity, but I completely understand the argument for the achievements.
Yeah, no, I get. I get that as well. Because again, in my Rocky Marciano hater period, I was kind of looking at his record, and up until I think it's around like the 38th fight or something, he is fighting, like you said, kind of club fighters, kind of people that are not anywhere near a world level. And when a part of your legacy, John, is being a certain number and O, i.e. in this case 49-0, if 38 of them are shit, then it doesn't really mean much, does it? So yeah, that's kind of that's what I didn't have him on my, I didn't have him in my top five either. I don't think I've even had him in 10, but I don't know. I've not, possibly, he'd probably make 10. He'd probably make top 10, actually.
I've got him in 10. He's absolutely in 10. Like, he's a fight of the year with Ezard Charles. His championship run is really strong. He's absolutely in my 10. He just doesn't make my 5 because of the lack of depth and the amount that rematches feature in his quality wins. Mm.
Yeah, I agree. I'm pretty much agreed with you there. And I guess, you know, because he boxed Joe Lewis and a lot of those, they were a little bit older as well. They were a little bit on the turn by the time he boxed them as well. Still great names, still great wins, but just not as good a wins as perhaps they should have been. Who did you have at number 3, John?
Number 3, I have got Jack Johnson. If we're talking about historical impact, I don't think that there's anybody with a greater impact. And whilst his resume in places doesn't have the greatest amount of depth, which is me completely contradicting what I said a minute ago, his historical impact, what he managed to achieve at a time when everything was stacked against him, is massively important. His legacy in the sport transcends just boxing. You know, I think it was a massive cultural impact, and that's why he's as high as 3 for me.
I'm going to bore everybody. I have Jack Johnson at 3 as well. for those very same reasons. Because he was such a good fighter, and it took him far too long to get a title fight. And then also what he did for kind of, in a kind of roundabout way, he kind of made the, brought forward the conversation about civil rights. You know, he was born at a time, you know, his mother would have been a slave, his grandmother would have been a slave, and, you know, he won the title in 1908. So, you know, slavery had only been abolished 40-odd years at that point, so not long at all, in America. So, you know, this is a guy that's coming out of a pretty, really tough time in America and ends up being, you know, the first, you know, African-American or black man in total to be the heavyweight champion of the world. And yeah, just everything else about him as a personality as well. So yeah, he's in my five as well, actually. So in my three, sorry, he's for number three. Whipping through these now because Luke has got some technical issues.
I think it looks like he's back.
We got to number three. Both me and John had Jack Johnson. I'm going to need you to not say Jack Johnson. Who's number three?
Jack Johnson.
I knew it.
Set I think myself. We might have the same top threes, actually.
Yeah.
I think we are going to have the same top threes, and they're going to be in the same order, aren't they?
Mm. And I heard a bit of what you were saying, actually. And yeah, I mean, exactly the same reasons, the sort of historical import of the man and influence. I mean, in a way, I think he's more socially and historically significant than the people I've got ahead of him. Mm. But his resume is not as deep as theirs.
Yeah. So I suppose it's good. You think we're going to have the same order as well?
Yeah, I think so.
Right. Okay. Let's do something fun. After three, we're all going to say our number twos.
Yep.
One, two, three.
Joe Louis.
Okay. It's interesting, Joe Louis. I always talk about him, not in a negative way, but when I talk about black fighters, and I talk about how it can be difficult for them to navigate the space of boxing. And I always, when I'm talking about Anthony Joshua, I find myself talking about Joe Louis, and I end up talking about Frank Bruno because...
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Joe Louis did... We talk about Jack Johnson... Joe Louis, Luke, was the complete opposite, wasn't he, of what Jack Johnson was. Jack Johnson was this, I'll sleep with who I want, I'll do what I want, I'll be what I want, I'll say what I want. Joe Louis was this hyper-controlled, didn't smile if he won, didn't celebrate too much, just a completely different character and personality. Did the whole military service, everything. So why number two for you, Luke?
Accomplishments, you know, historical significance as well. Cause I mean, that Max Schmeling fight was huge.
Yeah.
And had incredible political significance at the time, but also, I mean, just the length of his reign, he demolished everybody, you know, he was champion, was it like 11 years or something?
Yep.
It was ridiculous. Yep. Ridiculous amount of time, ridiculous amount of defenses. Massive puncher, great boxer, took the sport to new heights of popularity. And yeah, the opposite to Jack Johnson, but great in his own way at becoming a mainstream hero to all Americans and a sort of unifying figure as opposed to a polarizing figure. I'm not saying one is better to do than the other. They were different in the way they approached things, but equally great, I think. But I think that he's ahead of Johnson for me just on ring accomplishments and length of reign. And also Jack Johnson blatantly ducked once he was champion. He ducked those other black fighters and didn't give him a chance, which we have to hold against him, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's like he got through the door and then closed the door behind him, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a shame. I think sometimes what we do, John, is not, I don't mean we, but we in the world, we confuse great and best. But actually what I think we've done quite well with our lists is they've kind of merged the two. Because greatness is something bigger than just being than accomplishments, I think. And I think that's probably what puts Joe Louis below our number ones. Do you find yourself doing that, John, confusing greatest and best? And why do you have Joe Louis at number two?
Yeah, the whole greatest and best is a difficult thing to try and marry up at times. And I'm going to do something particularly mean to you just now, Cal. And
I know what's coming.
Floyd is better than Manny, but Manny is greater than Floyd.
Oh, you motherfucker. That is mean.
I don't think it's controversial in the slightest. I think based on his achievements and what he did, greatness lies with Manny, whereas Floyd is better. I don't think that's controversial.
I wish the listeners could see Cal's face right now, because he honestly looks either he's going to have a heart attack or he's going to go around, get on a train now, John, and come and beat you up. But that face.
Do you know what? I try not to get involved in clickbait stuff, but that's what John's doing. He's lending himself to very cheap version of boxing media, which is say something completely outrageous and completely false in order to generate clicks for himself to get followers. A lot of people think Manny Pacquiao's greater than Floyd Mayweather. He's not. Floyd's the straw that stirs the drink, and it still is to this day. He's having fucking arguments with, you know, Bill Haney at the minute. He's the guy. Like, he is the definitive fighter of the last 30, 40 years.
The greatest businessman that boxing has ever seen.
Yeah.
He really is. He really is. I'm glad he's paying his taxes. I saw the other day that he felt the need to tell everybody how much tax he was paying the IRS. So I'm glad he's doing that. Because that's what got Joe Louis, right? That's what got Joe Louis. He had to work in casinos and all sorts because he didn't pay the tax, man. So I'm glad Floyd's doing that. It catches up with everybody in the end, especially in America. They're ridiculous.
Can I add one thing about Joe Louis?
Yes.
And I think, again, I think he's become underrated in a way in terms of how famous he was. A lot of people today wouldn't have even heard of him. And yet, you know, when he died, Ronald Reagan made a special dispensation to have him buried in Arlington Cemetery, which is normally reserved for certain military rank or something like that, which Joe Louis didn't fulfill, although despite his war service. You know, that is huge. So he was to a certain generation of Americans, he was a true national hero. And today he's a bit forgotten.
And that one punch KO of Max Schmeling is still one of the greatest heavyweight results. I will argue black is blue with anyone on that one. It is a fantastic result. I think that there are very few results since that have topped it.
No, it's one of those things that what was that show that was on Channel 4 in like the early hours of the morning? They used to have a box. It might be like KO TV or something. It was on in the early hours of the morning on Channel 4. And when I worked nights in a warehouse back then, many, many years ago, that was on. And they used to show that Joe Louis fight all the time. They used to show it all the time and some other old fights as well. I think it might have been one of the Emil Griffith fights when he killed the fighter as well. They showed that one quite a bit. They showed the quite morbid fights, to be honest. But I think it was KO TV. And That really was a just a spectacular knockout. And you're right, actually, Luke. I've been watching that Masters of the Air on Apple TV, and for Joe Lewis, the pressure that was on him, Luke, to fight Max Mellin with that much pressure and that much going on in the world, it's amazing they even made that fight, to be honest. Yeah, it says a lot about him, doesn't it, Luke?
Yeah, he was under massive pressure in that fight. He'd lost, obviously, to Schmelling before. You know, the eyes of the world were on that fight. So, yeah, I agree with John. That is that's probably an underrated victory. They're like, oh, yeah, he wiped him out in the rematch. But when you think about the pressure that was on him to do that, you know, with war approaching and all of those things, incredible, incredible performance. Mm. Yeah, ice cold in that fight, he was ice cold.
So he's number one. Everybody's going to know who our number ones are. No need for a 3-2-1 here. It's, you know, it's Muhammad Ali. Him and Mike Tyson are the most famous boxers. You know, for someone like me that loves boxing merch, it's actually quite frustrating that you can't get anything much outside of Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali. But, you know, Luke, we went to see the Rumble in the Jungle rematch show that was the other week. There's the Roots of Fight collections. He's in the UFC game. Like, he's a giant. He's actually he's the only boxer that I would say transcended the sport. He was bigger than the sport, Muhammad Ali. And when he died, actually, we did, for Boxing Monthly, I think we all did our little mini kind of obituaries to him, our little kind of memoriams to him. And I wrote that in mine was, he was bigger than boxing. He was bigger than the sport. But actually, we think about all the stuff kind of outside of the ring for Muhammad Ali, you know, the Vietnam War, civil rights, Malcolm X, all this other stuff that he had going on. He was 3-time heavyweight champion of the world. He beat George Foreman at 32. He boxed Joe Frazier 3 times. Even when he was absolutely shot to bits and lost the title to Leon Spinks, he goes and wins the fucking thing back. Like, just... It's not just people... Again, with Muhammad Ali, we talk about greatest and best. He was both. He was absolutely both. John, anything else to add on that with Muhammad Ali? He is your number one, isn't it? It's not Michael Spratt, is it? Muhammad Ali is
your number one. No, it's Ali. And it's just when you get into the resume, you know, I think people of a modern generation may not appreciate just how big an upset it was when he became world champion. Right. There were many people who believed that Sonny Liston was unbeatable at that point. You know, that was such a huge victory. And then the defences, the massive super fights. You've got everything in that career. You've got super fights. You've got fight of the year contenders. You've got knockouts. You've got fantastic boxing. There's something in Muhammad Ali's career for every type of fight fan. And I think we'll never see anything like it in an era where everything is so risk controlled. The odds of there being somebody else like that again are very unlikely. Do you think that's unfair?
No, not at all. Not at all. Anything else to add, Luke, before we go on to our favourites?
Yeah, I mean, just to add to what John said, you know, the resume, you know, 3 fights with Norton, Lyle, Bonavena, Jerry Quarry. You know, it was the deepest era that heavyweight boxing has ever known. He fought absolutely everybody. And I mean, if you look at the sort of the dates, you know, he fought, I think, every champion from Floyd Patterson, who became champion, I think, 56, up until Larry Holmes, who was basically lineal champion until 84 or something. Mm. That's everyone over almost a 30-year period. It's phenomenal. Phenomenal. There'll never be another. No one will ever overtake him as the greatest, because also boxing will never again have that worldwide impact that it had with him. The last thing to say for me, Muhammad Ali, he was the world heavyweight champion. He fought around the world. He wasn't restricted to one country, you know, just fighting in America. He fought in lots of different countries. He was a true global figure, global champion.
Mm. Yeah, that's a fair point. You know, at a time where, you know, kind of a lot of guys are fighting in Saudi now, you know, the British heavyweight champions always end up fighting in Britain or in Vegas. The Americans end up fighting in Vegas or America, the Barclays Center, whatever. Muhammad Ali fought in the Philippines, in Zaire, in America, in Europe, in England, everywhere. And yeah, Joe Lewis as well, same thing, box absolutely everywhere. Sugar Ray Robinson, same thing, box absolutely everywhere. It's a valid point, Luke, it really is. Favourites. I don't think we would have surprised too many people with our top five best, but I think our favourites might surprise some people. Mine aren't in... I need to change that last. That last one is stupid. I need to change that one. I put Julius Francis as my top five favourite because he knocked out that bloke outside the pub in Wembley. Don't even know who my number five is now.
Were you struggling? You were struggling when you got to five.
I actually was a little bit. Yeah, I was a little bit. I'm going to leave it. Yeah, he's not my number five because he knocked out that bloke outside Wembley. Luke, who's your number five?
You know what? I've not written down the five because I thought it was just a sort of general favourites rather than a top five. But I'm going to go with Frank Bruno.
Oh, okay. Why?
It's sentimental. It's growing up. You know, the man was a national figure. It was staying up to listen to him on the radio against Mike Tyson in 88 or 89, whenever it was. It's a reminder, a link to my youth, a reminder when boxing was on BBC and on Sports Night. And you know, we sort of naively believed that Frank Bruno might become the world heavyweight champion. And he just always seemed like such a nice bloke. And he was my hero when I was a kid.
Yeah, he did always come across well. And I saw him at Bovingdon Market, which is a kind of a market where people sell fake clothes and meat and stuff like that. And there he was just bopping around. And he was a lump. He was a massive man. And I didn't have the stones to go and say hello to him because there was three or four people kind of already bothering him. And the empath in me didn't want to bother him any more than he already was being bothered. So I just kind of left him to it. But the size of the man and, yeah, have an affection for him as well. I completely understand that at that one completely. John, who did you have at number five or whoever?
Deontay Wilder.
Ah, you fucker. I've got him as well. Why?
Because heavyweight boxing is quite shit quite a lot of the time. For the most part, we're watching it for the knockouts. We don't really care what happens in between because most of the time it's not the best spectacle. It's not as entertaining as welterweights or middleweights or lightweights or any of the other divisions where they can throw punches without being blowing out of their arse after three rounds. So Deontay Wilder almost certainly delivered a knockout up until very recently. And there's now, following the defeats to Parker and Fury, there's now this, see, he was shit. I knew he was shit. He was always shit. And he just fought cans. And in about 10, 15 years' time, people are going to start appreciating what he did. He was willing to fight guys he didn't need to fight. Like, yes, the Fury fights were arranged at a time where they thought Fury was probably a bit of a soft touch. But people forget he was willing to fight Povetkin. He fought Ortiz twice.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
When he was the bogeyman of the division, he rematched him after he was giving him hell in the first fight. You know, he was fearless, he's charismatic, he's a massive puncher. You've got comedy fight finishes like windmilling oddly in a corner. You've got devastating knockouts against Spilka and Brazil. There's a knockout for everybody in Deontay Wilder's resume. And as I say, he's going to be underappreciated for about a decade, and then people are going to miss him when he's gone.
I concur on all of that. He's actually on my list somewhere for those very reasons. I remember being in a hotel in Manchester. I can't remember. I think I might have gone to see the George Groves Chris Eubank Jr. fight. I think it might have been the same night he boxed Dominic Brazil, and sat in my bed at 4 a.m. with my phone in front of me watching Wilder Dominic Brazil. I might have got the British fight wrong, but I know he boxed Dominic Brazil, and he just fucking smashed him to bits in a round, because he was just, and he's not really anymore, bless him, you never know, he could come back, but it was must watch. You just had to watch the Wilder fight and the second Luis Ortiz fight, where he lost every round. He lost absolutely every round of that second Luis Ortiz fight. And I'm watching it as a Wilder fan, wanting him to win. And like him, I knew he could find a shot. And that was the beauty of him. Even though he wasn't very good and he was a bit limited, he found a shot and he believed he would find a shot. He always had it in him that even against Parker the other week, he thought, I'll find a shot. At some point, he didn't. He couldn't pull the trigger anymore. He's not that guy anymore. But back then against Luis Ortiz, he believed he'll find the shot, and he did. And I remember just screaming, like, just, he's done it again. So, yeah, I concur on Deontay Wilder. Just absolutely adore him. And he seems like a pretty peaceful guy, and he seems pretty happy. And if he boxes again, great. And if he doesn't, that's okay too. Did Wilder make it onto your list, Luke?
He's not on my five, but I do like him. And, you know, pure box office, pure excitement. A bit of a knob, I think. But but I do like watching him.
Aren't a lot of them, to be fair. They are. These are insecure guys, you know. I think it was Thomas Hauser said, you know, boxers at their core are insecure, damaged people. They're not poets, you know, they're fighters. So I get it. He says some stupid stuff about wanting to catch a body and all that sort of stuff. Fucking stupid, but I do love him. So that was I'm a little bit ahead because I had Julius Francis and now I've got Deontay Wilder, but I've kind of got that out of the way now. Deontay Wilder was on there and we've spoken about him. So, Luke, who else did you have on the list? I'm a bit lost where we are on numbers now.
My number four is Smoking Bert Cooper.
Oh, hello.
Good choice.
Hello.
38-25.
Ooh.
Ring record. Nearly became the champion against Evander Holyfield. Was like a punch away. That absolute war with Michael Moira. Occasionally he would just disgracefully quit for no reason. I think he was called Smoking Bert Cooper probably because of the heroin rather than the smoke in his fist. But what a character. And for me, that sort of lost generation of 80s and 90s heavyweights with talent and excitement to burn. He's a sort of poster boy for that, and just a sort of fucked up romantic hero of my youth again. Bert Cooper, love him.
Great. What sort of, who, for people that perhaps wouldn't know about him, Luke, who did he box? How did he get on? You know, what are some Bert Cooper fights that people should watch?
Well, the Moira fight, which he actually lost, but I think both men were down twice. Did Moira win in about 4 or 5?
Yeah.
An absolute war. And yeah, the Holyfield fight, where, so I think the background to this was Holyfield had beaten Buster Douglas. Was it his first defense against Bert Cooper or his second defense? He was meant to fight,
sounds right,
an Italian called Francesco Damiani, who I think was European champion or such like. And Damiani got an injury or something. Cooper was brought in, a no hope, a substitute. And in about round 2 or 3, pummels Holyfield. Really hurts him. Holyfield, I think, is only kept up by the ropes. Referee gives a count when maybe should have, because Holyfield wasn't really down, he was against the ropes, maybe should have let it continue before intervening. And yeah, Cooper was 1 or 2 punches away from being world heavyweight champion. And that sort of close but no cigar sort of story. There's always something a bit romantic about that, isn't there? In another universe, in another dimension, maybe he became champion.
Amazing, amazing. John, did you have a number four?
I'm going to name my number four and then let Luke explain him better.
Okay.
Because it is Ike Abeabuchi.
Come on.
But Luke, go on then, Luke. Tell us about him. Subject matter expert.
Yeah, he's on my list. Subject matter expert. He's on my list as well, of course. He's threatening a comeback still. He's got a YouTube page and he's on Facebook, and he's issued a challenge to Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk. And he actually looks in quite good shape, even though I think he's now 50. And in Nigeria, and no hope of going back to America. But what potential. What a fighter. If anyone out there has not seen the Tua fight and the Chris Bird fight, then watch them. And if you go to the dictionary next to, wasted potential, there's a picture of Ike Abeabuchi there, because he coulda, shoulda been a great heavyweight. He had everything. He was skilled. He had stamina. But he was absolutely nuts, and that did for him in the end. But yeah, he's my number two. But I'm glad John's got him on.
Why did you have him on your list, John?
Because he's the great what if. The Tua and Bird fights show you about this guy who looks as if he could be the guy to dominate the division for a long time. He has got an engine, he's got power, he's got accuracy, he's got a great jab. His defense isn't terrible. He looks like he could be the next big thing, and then he just completely implodes his entire life and is still talking about a comeback, apparently aged 50. So it's the romantic in me always thinks, what if you just hadn't completely lost the plot? That will always stay with me.
I would also say, Luke's right, watch the David Tua fight, but also read his book, buy his book, The President of Pandemonium by Luke G. Williams. Also, listen to episode 123 of Below the Belt. I've just quickly looked it up on my phone to remember what number it was. It's called The President, episode 123 of Below the Belt, where me and Luke talk about Ike Abeabuchi. So yeah, lots of stuff for you guys to catch up on with Abeabuchi. They're both perfectly reasonable. Is that your number four, John? Who's number three?
Let me check my list. Yeah, that was my number four. My number three is really out of left field.
Okay.
So my number three is Clifford Etienne.
Okay.
I know.
The Black Rhino. A guy who is best known for absolutely getting blitzed by Mike Tyson, stopped by Valuev late on. But amongst all these fantastic bottle jobs, there is this tremendous war with Clay Bay, which is one of the most underrated fights of all time. And I like a guy who lacks a bit of bottle, who on one night put it all together and just produced a tremendous fight. I also like an interesting story, and the fact that he's currently serving 107 years without the possibility of parole for armed robbery just adds to the legacy. One of these ridiculous, harsh sentences for black men in the United States of America. I think any excuse to shine a light on what's going on there is a good thing. But as I say, if you've never seen his fight with Lawrence Clay Bay, find it on YouTube. It's tremendous.
Mm. I'll see if I can find some links later on and see if I can post them on the Twitter feed. Any Clifford Etienne stand out to you, Luke?
He's not on my list, I have to admit.
Okay.
I don't really remember many of his fights. I remember reading lots of articles about him. I don't think I've seen that many of his fights. Mm. But great. I love these left field choices.
Yeah, great choice. I knew he was in prison. I didn't realise it was for 107 years. That is harsh.
107 years.
Yeah. Random number, isn't it? Armed robbery as well. Seems harsh. Who was your number three, Luke?
So, my number three, because Ibaya Bucci was my number two, my number three is Bob Fitzsimmons.
Oh, hello.
Bit old school. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I love an old school heavyweight history. Massive puncher. And a world champ, the first ever, I believe, three-weight world champion from Cornwall.
Oh.
Red-headed, like myself, and covered in freckles. The Freckled Wonder, I think he was sometimes known as. So, yeah, Bob Fitzsimmons. Again, I would say massively underrated and forgotten about in terms of what he achieved.
Mm. Is there much footage of him or not?
No, I think there's the bit of the Corbett fight. I think that's just about it.
So for you, is it more about the story and
and the history and that sort of era of heavyweight boxing where it was still on the margins of legality and, you know, they're having to skip from state boundary to state boundary and that type of thing. I think Wyatt Earp refereed one of his fights. I would have loved to have been around and watch a Bob Fitzsimmons fight.
That's such a random referee, Wyatt Earp.
I think it was one of his fights.
Yeah. Did he have a gun on him? Like,
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it was in one of those states that he was allowed where he wasn't on the run from somebody. Him and Billy the Kid ringside with him. Like, random. Okay, number three. My number three, might upset people, is David Haye. Because
is that heavyweight David Haye or is that cruiserweight David?
Kind of has to be because we're talking about heavyweights. I think the first time I saw him box was at Cruiser, and it was when he knocked out that geezer for the European title in a round. Like, it was a defense of the European title, and he knocked him out in a round, and then he was on Soccer AM the next morning. Like, he had him in a kind of thing. And he obviously unified the cruiserweight titles with Enzo Macronelli. I stayed up to like 2 a.m, even though the fight was at the O2. Mental that they had it on at that time, but they did that to satisfy kind of American viewers. It was just British boxing was kind of coming out of that lull where, you know, it was all the fights on Sky were in leisure centres, and there was Carl Froch would boxing on ITV, but nothing was really, Brits boxing was kind of in a lull, there wasn't really much going on. Amir Khan was obviously doing bits, but he was mostly boxing in America. And then David Haye kind of came along and was a bit gobby, he hit hard, he didn't box anyone very good at heavyweight, but I just liked kind of his whole personality. I had the David Haye t-shirt, I had the red one, I had the blue one. I think he had the white one. Like, I love a bit of merch, me. People that know me know I love merch. He was just, I just liked his whole shtick. He got us all convinced, or he got me convinced that he was going to beat Vlad Klitschko. Mm. And he completely shat the bed. He just did not turn up at all. Flashed his toe on the TV. It's like, mate, get an injection and crack on. He embarrassed himself. And after that, I still had a soft spot for him. I was devastated he lost to Tony Bellew, so I can't stand Tony Bellew. But David Haye was my number three. I just loved him for that time where I was kind of getting more heavy into boxing, and he was kind of out there. And he was in the UK, and he beat Audley, and, you know, but Audley had some of us believing, yes, we can, and all that, you know. So, yeah, I like Audley as well. Audley might have made the list because he went to the same school as me. So that was my number three. Luke, who's number two?
Number two? My number two was Ibaya Bucci, wasn't it?
Oh, sorry. Oh, I haven't done mine. Have you done your number two, John?
Nope, my number two is Big George Foreman.
Oh, hello. Oh. Why? Tell us why, John.
So, Olympic champion, dominant world champion, great fights with Ali, and then what really sells it for me is the comeback. As something out of like a Rocky meets Blues Brothers mashup where he's on a mission from God to become world heavyweight champion again to earn enough money to save his local church, and somehow pulls it off despite the fact that he is not what we remember. He is not chiseled, he is not afroed, he is bald, he is overweight. And given that I am bald and I am overweight, he is my hero. I will always have a place in my heart for that comeback. Even if the fight, apart from the Moore one, weren't the best to watch, it's a tremendous story, and I love a tremendous story.
Have you seen the film?
No, not yet.
I've not seen it either. I haven't seen it. Have you seen it, Luke?
No, it seemed to come and go or not get released. Like, I was looking forward to it, and then I never noticed it come out. Has it been out?
It's out. It's been on Sky Movies and everything. It's... for Dodgy Fire Stick users, it's on the Dodgy Fire Stick. Like, it's, yeah, you can get it. Like, it's available to watch. It's probably on streaming services soon enough. It'll be on Netflix and Prime if it's not already. I'd be surprised if it's not on there already. George Foreman's a good shout. And I always say this, there is something romantic about the old champion coming back and sticking it to the young guys. There is all, no matter what sport it is, there's always something about that. It was... you know, the first time I thought of that was when Vlad Klitschko stuck it on Anthony Joshua for 11 rounds at Wembley. You know, there is something about that. So I completely understand why John is kind of enamoured by that. He's a great guy, George. And that's a good second favourite. That's not bad. I can go with that. Mine is Danny Williams.
Ooh.
Danny Williams is my second favourite heavyweight ever. I saw his name yesterday, actually. I think it was on Boxing News, and every once a year, they'll write an article about how he's still boxing and all of that. I just quickly checked. He's 55 and 33. he's just lost a four-rounder. Before that, he knocked a guy out in the first round. I think it was a body shot. He's still boxing. I really wish he wasn't. But when, again, that period, the early 2000s, I was 18, 19, 20 then, and boxing was kind of in a lull, and it was that period where he was fighting Sprott and Audley, and all these guys were all boxing each other. Skelton, they was all boxing each other. None of the fights were particularly good. There was one or two big moments in there. Danny Williams sticking a low blow on Michael Sprott and then knocking him out. I remember watching that on BBC Grandstand on a Sunday afternoon, watching a repeat of that. And I just had an affection for him. I just liked him because he was a flawed genius, if you like. Sometimes he'd be amazing and sometimes he'd be rubbish. And then he knocks out Mike Tyson. And I've always just not liked Mike Tyson. I've just found him to be a bit overrated. I'm so happy. Well, actually, one of you two guys might have Mike Tyson at number one, which I'm going to fucking be fuming if that happens. But I just never really liked him. And so for Danny Williams to knock him out, I was just like, yes. And then I went to watch Prize Fighter at the XL down in South London. And he lost in the first round, but in the third round of that fight, he really stuck it on the guy. And the next morning I had no voice. My voice had completely gone because I love Danny Williams that much. So that's why Danny Williams is my number two, second favorite of all time. I'm going to say my number one now, just because it's actually on my other list, and it's Lennox Lewis for the same reasons I said before. I love Lennox Lewis. And I've already said why. I'm not going to go into it again. So I'm going to skip straight back to you, Luke, and ask you what your who your favourite heavyweight is of all time.
Yeah, well, just quickly on Danny Williams.
Sorry,
I like Danny, but the worst fight I've ever seen live involved him. It was him versus Audley Harrison.
Oh,
it was fucking terrible. And I think I paid about 40 quid or something. Jesus.
Did you go to
anyway?
It?
Yeah, I was there. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Dear. Anyway. My favourite, you know what, I didn't include anyone from my other list. Otherwise, it might have been Ali, so I just thought I'd keep two separate lists.
No, you did the right thing. You did the right thing.
But my favourite, not on my top five, is Gene Tunney.
Oh, you've got so, not niche, historical.
Yeah, you know me, I love a bit of the history, and I just think he was a fascinating character. Like Mars, you know, he retired on top. He beat Harry Greb. He beat Dempsey twice. And the boxing public never really forgave him for sort of achieving everything, getting all the money and then getting out. And he was a thinking fighter. You know, he had aspirations. You know, it was a bit like somebody like Eubank used to remind me of him a little bit, you know, the affectation and so on of a gentleman, which I think Tunney sort of also affected a little bit. So I've just always found him a really, really fascinating figure. And he was a great technical boxer as well. Great chin, incredible record. Gene Tunney's my number one.
Did he do acting? Did he do some theatre stuff?
Yeah, I think he might have done something like that, or a couple of films or something. It was that era where the heavyweight champion would often, you know, segue into something else. I don't think massively. Also, he wrote a couple of books, his sort of autobiographies, and I think he wrote some articles about heavyweight history for Encyclopedia Britannica as well. He's a very good writer. I don't think his stuff was ghostwritten. Nice. Very bright guy, very interesting guy. And virtually, I mean, if you walk down the street, I think you could speak to 200 people and none of them would have heard of him, which is a shame.
Yeah, that is a shame. That is a shame. Number one, John.
So, like Luke, I've kept two separate lists. And my number one is Sonny Liston.
Oh, what reasons? Tell us why. Oh, fascinating story.
There are so many reasons. Like, yeah. Number one, I love a good story. And Sonny Liston has got a fantastic story. No one knows when he was born. No one really knows how he died. Mm. He has got mob connections. He was a fearsome fighter. He was the most intimidating man on the planet. He was what Mike Tyson tried to be. Mm. He was the genuine article, a guy who had underrated ability. His long reach gave him an excellent jab. He had devastating power. The aura of the man is just pure intimidation and menace. It's a story full of myth and legend because there's very few facts concerning his personal life. The things that we know for definite happen in the ring, but even then there's the whole phantom punch in the Ali rematch. Is it a phantom punch? Is it a punch that lands? Is it a short right hand that's difficult to see from the camera angle? Was he paid off? Did he bet against himself? All these things, just a fantastic story, a fascinating character, and a phenomenal fighter.
That's a great shout. Sonny Liston's a great shout. I wish he was in mine. He would have been in mine if I didn't have Lennox in both. Any thoughts on Sonny Liston, Luke? It's a great shout, isn't it?
Yeah, John said it all. John, am I right? Did he adopt a kid from Sweden or something? There's something random.
Yes.
Random memory.
Yes.
It's like Mark Butcher said once. He goes, heavyweights are all batshit mental. They're all mental. And one thing he said was they don't have to make weight. They don't have to be as disciplined. Mm. And they're fighters. So they don't have to be... They are disciplined to a point, but they don't have to be as disciplined as all the rest of the fighters. So they're a bit mental anyway because they box for a living. But then you take the kind of the regimented kind of discipline out of it as well. And they've just got and they get paid loads as well. They've got even more freedom to be absolutely bonkers. And they are, aren't they, Luke? They're just all absolutely mental. Not all of them, but no, a lot of them are.
Yeah. And listen, John's right. It's a great story, a tragic story. You know, I always feel very sorry for Sonny Liston when I read about him. I always end up feeling quite sad, really.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't really appreciated.
He was another that ended up doing stuff in the casinos, wasn't he? Casinos.
Still fighting, I think, when he died. And I think he wanted sort of respect and acceptance, and he never really got it. He just ended up being sort of disrespected and feared. And yeah, it's a sad story.
Yeah, it is. And the book about him is called Night Train, and I've read that. It's a very good book. So I think for people, if you want to find something to... And I think Showtime actually made a documentary about Sonny Liston that might be out there in Daily Motion or something for you to watch. But the Night Train book is really good, and it tells a really good story about Sonny Liston. It's a sad story, but a good one as well. That was really good. That was really good, the lists. I have to think of what's next. What, you know, I don't know what we'd do for next top five. Top five reasons that Manny Pacquiao is a bag of shit. That'd be a good one. Something like that. We have gone right. We've gone a little bit over the hour, but I've got to do some editing because of we had some technical issues. So I think we won't be that much over an hour. Just because it's at the weekend, Luke, it's the big card out in Saudi. Mm-hmm. We'll just do quick predictions. Firstly, and I actually think this one is the more fascinating fight. when she's Zhang versus Zhou Lijiang against Joseph Parker. Who'd you like in that?
Oh, that is a
difficult, you know, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a. I think it's a proper 50-50. I really do. I'm gonna. Zhang seems to be favourite, doesn't he? I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wonder whether the Joyce fights might have flattered him a little bit. And I'm gonna go Parker, points or late stoppage, because I don't think Zhang's got the greatest engine.
Yeah. Okay.
I think Parker's on a good run.
He is. There is possibly an argument that the Wilder fight flatters Parker because Wilder just, yeah, looked completely uninterested. John, who do you like in that?
I like Parker because he's got the faster feet. And the Jerry Forrest fight, I cannot get out of my head, where Zhang knocks him down several times in the early rounds. Forrest forces him to fight at a pace he doesn't like. Zhang is blowing badly in the second half, and Jerry Forrest gets draw. I think that Parker has got fast feet. I think he can get in and out of range. I think he can make a pace that's uncomfortable for Zhang. I think Hrgović and Joyce and their plodding footwork really flattered him. I think that Parker's probably a stylistic nightmare, so I'm going to go with Parker by late stoppage when an exhausted Zhang basically has a little bit of a quit.
Oh, a little quit.
The Q word.
Just a little one. Just a little bit of exhaustion. He'll go down and he won't get back.
An exhausted quit. Where do you place the exhausted quit, John, on the quitter meter? We've spoken about this before, between, you know, kind of a zero, you know, I don't know what a zero would be, an exhausted quit, or, you know, a Victor Ortiz Berto 2. Where would you put an exhausted quit? Where would you put that? 3-4?
It goes somewhere just beneath a legitimate injury, because at the end of the day, we've all been a little bit exhausted and quit at something in our lives. And that's not when you're getting punched in the face. So I've got a lot of sympathy for that.
Okay. Fair enough. John hates quitters, Luke. Hates them.
I've noticed, yeah.
If anybody... If somebody could get knocked Spark out and he'll be texting me. Fuck me, quit there, Cal. He's like, flat. And he's like, he's quit there, Cal. I'm like, mate, he's been knocked Spark out. Nah, I quit.
I did sort of know that Daniel Dubois wouldn't be on his favourite heavyweight list.
I love Daniel Dubois, you know. I do love him. He's a bit quitty, but yeah, he wouldn't make John's. No chance. The first person in Daniel Dubois' DMs after that fight, after the Joyce fight, was John McDonald. Straight in there.
In all fairness, Daniel Dubois narrowly missed out on a spot by beating Big Baby. All is forgiven when you beat Janelle Miller. Like, that puts you right on the verge of my top five.
Yeah, I like Dubois, man. He would have actually been pretty close to mine. I think if I was to take Lennox off, he'd probably make it on there, just because he's a flawed genius. And I love that he's adopted a new nickname now, that he's stumbled upon the nickname of Big Daddy or the Daddy. Like, I love that. He's getting a bit of personality about him. So, yeah, I think he'd probably make my list if I took Lennox off, you know, to separate the two lists. Dubois would probably make it. So, yeah, fair enough. See, I was actually Zhang's gonna get him out of there.
Cool.
But I get it. Do you know what? You guys are making me change my mind, because Joyce is there to be hit, isn't he? He is there to be hit, and Zhang, no wonder he got him out there, because he's a big puncher. And yeah, I could see Parker winning, but I'm gonna go Zhang. I'm gonna go Zhang in six. Get him out of there in six. I should bring back the prediction league, actually. I did all right in that. And Luke, Joshua Ngannou, what are we expecting? It's a 10-rounder. What are we expecting?
You know, I don't hate this fight as much as I should do, maybe.
Okay.
Because I don't know anything about UFC, but Ngannou seems like a pretty tough motherfucker. I don't know if Joshua's going to stop him. I think it might be Joshua points.
I could see that. Yeah. John?
I'm going to go with Joshua stopping him in about five or six rounds. The sort of vintage Anthony Joshua stoppage point when he was at his best. I don't think he's necessarily at his best, but I do think that Ngannou was flattered by Fury. Whatever happened with Fury in that fight, if it's that the Wilder fights have taken a physical toll on him, that he didn't take it seriously, whatever it may be, he turned in a poor performance. I think that flattered Ngannou, and I think he probably suits Joshua quite well, assuming that he is as confident as he was in the Balin fight. So, yeah, I think he should be able to get him out of there. But as Luke said, Ngannou does look tough. He does look durable. And if he's got some power and lays a glove on Joshua early, he might go into jab and move mode. So,
Yeah, it's... I think Joshua decision. I think he's just going to... I can see him getting in a jab and move mode and just winning a decision. I think he might feel Ngannou's power at some point and go, oh, hello, I don't need this. And last thing I need is to get dropped by this guy. Even though he's done what he's done to Fury, he's put on a good performance against Fury and dropped him. I don't think Joshua wants that at this point. I don't think he needs that aesthetic, that out there of him getting knocked down. He needs to... His thing right now is rebuilding and putting himself as the guy to face the winner of Fury and Usyk down the line. Being an uncrowned champion, if you like. So I think, yeah, Joshua to kind of Andy Ruiz to it, basically, to box and move and win a decision. But, yeah, I get it. I could if Ngannou lands something early, and he was all right. He wasn't technically very good, but he had very good ring generalship, I thought. In that Fury fight, and he was good on the inside. He might not have been a really good body puncher, but he knew how to handle himself on the inside. And so I think, yeah, I think Joshua's going to win. I just think Joshua's technically too good, but yeah, I think Joshua will just outbox him in the end. Okay, then that will do. We need to think of a new list for next time. I really enjoyed that, chaps. Thank you so much, and I will speak to you both very soon. Take care.
Thanks, mate.
Take care.
Sports Social Podcast Network.